From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Lee Gaines, filling in for Brian Mackey this week, who is taking some much-deserved time off. So today on the program, who's taking care of your therapist? We'll talk about how the stress of the pandemic has taken a toll on mental health care workers. That is later this hour. First, it's time for our weekly Reporters Roundtable. Today, we're focusing on K-12 education. I'm joined now by three reporters from across the state. Peter Medlin is the education reporter for WNIJ in DeKalb. We're also joined by Mary Hansen, a reporter with NPR Illinois in Springfield. Mary, Peter, welcome back to the show.
Haley.
Hello.
And Christine Hatfield also joins us. She's a graduate student in the University of Illinois Springfield's Public Affairs Reporting Program and an intern with WGLT in Bloomington Normal and WCBU in Peoria. Christine, thanks for coming on the 21st.
Good morning, Lee. Thank you for having me.
And a reminder to our listeners, you can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. So, Peter, let's start off with COVID-19 and vaccines and in-person learning. So how has vaccine rollout gone for teachers in DeKalb and Rockford? Have they gotten easy access to the shot?
I've actually been hearing from a lot of teachers, especially like you mentioned in Rockford and DeKalb, but Rockford specifically, they had a couple clinics for vaccines. And I've heard that it's actually been going really smoothly. I heard a lot of actually positive reviews, not just from administrators, but teacher staff saying that everything went more smoothly than they expected.
And what about students returning to the classrooms? Is that something that's happened in that part of the state?
Yeah, well, actually Rockford is, I feel like, one of the fewer big school districts that has been blended. They've been doing a hybrid of in-person pretty much since last September, since the fall. And as for DeKalb, they came back at the beginning of this year, and they recently announced a plan to come back 5 days a week. And actually, that starts today.
Wow. 5 days a week today, full schedules?
Not full schedules. It is, I believe, just half days, 5 days a week for now. Because they still haven't got figured out the whole, you know, lunch situations, things like that, where people can't be masked and at a distance.
And Christine, same question to you. Have teachers in the Bloomington Normal and Peoria areas received vaccines?
I mean, it really depends on which districts we're talking about. In Peoria, on the whole, things seem to be going pretty well. Granted, the numbers I've got are a little bit out of date here, but as of early this month, Peoria Public Schools had around 75% of their teachers at least partially vaccinated. If you go over to nearby Dunlap, they were up to 86%. And then as far as Bloomington Normal, the information is a little bit hard to come by, but District 87 in Bloomington, their superintendent says by the end of this month, they're hoping just about all the staff and teachers will have hopefully had the chance to get at least one shot of the vaccine.
So, Christine, I know that at least some students are back in classrooms because I was actually in a classroom at Normal Community High School in late February. What can you tell me about the schedules or the models that districts are using in Peoria and Bloomington Normal?
Right. Well, Peoria's actually been in person 5 days a week since March 1st, that much I can tell you. And then as far as the Bloomington Normal area, Unit 5's had elementary school in person since early February, and starting next week, they're expanding in-person learning to all the grades. And then if we're talking District 87, they're bringing in students in person 4 days a week, starting tomorrow, actually. But their plan is that Mondays are going to remain virtual for the time being.
And Mary, I want to bring you into the conversation here. What about in Springfield? What can you tell me about the vaccine rollout for teachers there?
Sure. So I talked to some teachers all the way back in January who are having a lot of trouble getting, when they were first, eligible for the vaccine, having a lot of trouble booking appointments. You know, they were seeing a lot of things that, in some places of the state we're still seeing where they would post, Walgreens or Hy-Vee would post vaccine appointments and they would be sort of snapped up immediately. It does seem like it's been a lot easier in the last like month or 6 weeks to get an appointment. There have been a lot more options that have opened up in Sangamon County, including the county's site, which is running 7 days a week, has expanded availability of appointments and the number of appointments per day as supply has increased. And then of course we've opened up the National Guard site at the Illinois State Fairgrounds, which I believe is open to anybody in the state, but you know, it being here in Springfield, it's easy access for teachers. So it does seem to be easier. And then for some of the more rural or sort of school districts that are out in the county, not in Springfield proper, the county has been working with the Illinois National Guard with their mobile units, and they've sent a couple of mobile units to do 1 day clinics at high schools that are open to the public, but then also open to the educators there. So there do seem to be a lot more options now.
So interesting that you bring up rural districts, because I'm curious, is there a difference between the models that Springfield schools are using compared to the schools that are out in the county, or are they kind of similar?
So it does seem that more of the county schools were going back to in-person earlier than Springfield. Springfield announced in January that it would go 2 days a week in-person for students who opted, about half the students who opted for a hybrid model. And actually they just recently announced that they're going to be expanding to 4 days a week in person for those students. About 45% of the students in the district who have opted for the hybrid model will be going 4 days a week starting next week. I'm not as familiar with some of the rural school districts, but it does seem like a few of them have sort of went back to school in the fall and have been continuing.
So a year in and we are creeping back towards some kind of normal. Peter, I want to transition here and ask you about a story that you reported on an issue related to homeless students. First, I wondered if you could explain to our listeners what responsibilities schools have when it comes to identifying and educating homeless students.
Yeah, so basically there's this law that's called the McKinney-Vento Act, and that is a national law that's pretty much there to guarantee that students, regardless of their housing situation, are guaranteed that right to education. And through kind of funding through that, through grant funding from McKinney-Vento, then these local school districts can provide students not just education, but make sure that they have, food services. There's, different organizations and kind of homeless student liaisons that can help out and make sure that, families can get link cards and things like that, but they can't provide direct assistance, like, they can't pay your rent for the month or anything like that. So there are limitations to the grant funding.
Yeah, and I believe your reporting, you mentioned something about there are fewer homeless students being identified this year because of the pandemic. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so this data came out that said nationwide about 420,000 fewer homeless students were identified. And yeah, basically, they said, like, in a normal year, you'd see that and you'd say, great, that means less homeless students. But basically, all the advocates and the people around that are saying there's not actually fewer homeless students. In fact, there's probably more. It's just that schools can't find them because normally it's people on the district level, whether it be teachers, bus drivers, other kind of staff that are able to kind of identify and see signs of whether or not students might be in some kind of temporary housing situation.
And if you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Lee Gaines, and we're speaking with reporters Mary Hansen, Peter Medlin, and Christine Hatfield about their recent reporting on education in Illinois. Listeners, if you have a question for them or want to weigh in, you can call 800-222-9455, and you can always tweet us at 21STShow. And Christine, I want to bring you back into the conversation here. You've been following proposed legislation called the REACH Act, which, if passed, would mandate inclusive sex ed. Honestly, I think many of our listeners might be surprised to hear that sex ed isn't already required in Illinois. Christine, can you summarize the bill for us?
Right. So the idea the bill sponsors have been getting is that there are 30 other states that already require sex ed in public schools, and that Illinois is not one of those states. And so the idea that they're going with is that if we don't have adults teaching children these ideas when it comes to sex education, and of course that's a wide range of topics, but the idea is if we're not having adults teaching children these things in public schools, then they're going to have to learn themselves and perhaps not really in the most appropriate ways. So it's a question of giving them the information they need. And of course, that depends on really what grade we're talking about. The curriculum depends from level to level, but it's that matter of making sure children have the resources they need as they're growing up to be able to have those healthy relationships.
Yeah, and I've heard some criticisms that this bill would mandate teaching sex ed to kindergartners. What do the bill's advocates have to say about that?
I mean, it's the biggest thing is that matter of the curriculum varies from grade level to grade level. Like bullying in puberty, for example, wouldn't come up until third grade or later. The kindergarten through second grade is focused on some of those basic building blocks concepts that then, as you get into the later grade levels, that sort of builds up on that. And then some of the other opposition has been predominantly more on the religious front, on the basis of abortion being included in this and LGBTQ plus people being included in this, because they say it's a lifestyle choice, never mind the research out there that says it's not. In when it comes to them saying it promotes abortion, the bill sponsor in the House says otherwise, that it basically brings all these options up and lets the students decide for themselves.
Thank you for that, Christine. I want to switch gears briefly here away from K-12 education to talk about gun violence a little bit. Mary, I know this is something that you've reported on. What can you tell me about gun violence in Springfield in recent months or during the pandemic?
Sure. So in recent months, we've seen an increase in the number of shootings in Springfield. About 3 weeks ago, there was a news conference with police leadership, law enforcement leadership, as well as leaders across the city talking about an increase in gun violence in the first couple of months. One of the statistics that they cited was that there were 16 people who had been shot in the first 2.5 months of the year, and that number is generally, two or three per month. So really, it's just seen an increase there. And since that has happened, since that news conference with city leaders talking about the increase in gun violence and calling on the community to, cooperate with police to give information and that sort of thing, there's been three additional shootings. So kind of a very scary turn here. And when law enforcement spoke at that news conference, one of the things that they said is they think that they attributed it to gang violence or groups of younger adults talking about maybe like the role of social media played into it. It's sort of some similar themes to when we saw an increase in gun violence in the city a couple of years ago too. They sort of talked about similar reasons for that.
Is there any reason why the pandemic might be increasing that? Is that something that city officials are talking about?
So, I mean, not directly. I think one of the things that I've talked to some of the police leadership about is they've talked about, they're not able to do as much kind of like proactive policing or sort of kind of going around and talking to people in the community and gathering information and that sort of thing. So it's they've talked about the pandemic sort of impeding their response, but they haven't necessarily talked about the pandemic in terms of contributing to the violence.
Well, that's something that I know we'll all want to keep our eye on. And just a heads up for our listeners, tomorrow's show is actually going to focus exclusively on gun-related issues. So stay tuned for that. Peter, I want to go back to you and talk about another story. We only have a couple minutes left, but could you tell me a little bit about the effect that the pandemic has had on youth in foster care and their educational experience?
Yeah, so youth in care have been experiencing a lot of the challenges with remote learning and going to school during the pandemic that a lot of students have, which is, all the same sorts of trauma and not having access to their teachers. But it is something that is kind of exponential in some of these cases with youth in care, because these are students that have already experienced trauma in their in their home life potentially, and youth in care often move around a lot, which, you know, doesn't often put them in, you know, position to have access to, you know, teachers and kind of a steady educational experience. And yeah, so they've been experiencing a lot of trouble in kind of similar ways that some students already have, but you know, it's, again, it is a little more increased in some cases with those students.
And just really briefly, what are providers trying to do to overcome some of the challenges that youth in care are having?
Yeah, so there are specific programs, like, you know, there's NIU, they have a specific program called the Educational Access Project, and they basically have advisors across the state that try to make sure that they can help students. And that's from all sorts of accommodations, like with special ed, trying to make sure that they have, you know, Wi-Fi, they've, you know, getting extra funding to make sure that people have hotspots and things like that. And make sure that, you know, if like I said, with the amount that those students move around, that the proper education paperwork gets filled out and that sort of thing, which obviously has been more challenging given that they're gonna have to do these things remotely and maybe home visits have been less frequent, but those are the kind of services generally.
Well, thank you. And we'll have to leave it there. I want to thank all of you for your fantastic reporting. We just spoke with Peter Medlin, an education reporter for WNIJ in DeKalb, Christine Hatfield, a reporting intern with WGLT in Bloomington Normal and WCBU in Peoria. And we were also joined by Mary Hansen, reporter for NPR Illinois in Springfield. Thanks to everyone for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.